Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and I'm joined by Fraser Nelson and James Forsyth. Well, Boris Johnson has suffered his first defeat in the House of Commons even before he's Prime Minister, James. What's just happened?
So the House of Commons today was voting on an amendment that had come back from the House of Lords that had been toughened up by various MPs, that designed to prevent the new Prime Minister from proroguing Parliament, essentially sending Parliament home in the run-up, the presumption being that this would be done in the run-up to a no-deal Brexit to stop it happening. The government lost, and lost quite big. It lost by 40-odd votes, and a whole bunch of government ministers abstained. Margot James resigned as a minister to vote against. And I think it's an indication that on this question, Boris Johnson doesn't have a majority even before he's become Prime Minister. I think it shows how hard it would be for him to steer a no-deal through Parliament. I think it is worth noting, though, that this amendment doesn't stop no deal, and it doesn't even create an obvious vehicle for stopping no deal. I think it makes it harder, but it isn't the magic thing that stops it. I think, though, the fact that John Bercow took the chair today and deemed in scope an amendment that had previously been deemed out of scope is a reminder that those people who wish to get to allow Parliament votes to try and stop no deal are going to have an active and willing ally in the Speaker.
Fraser, Number 10 have said that Theresa May isn't going to sack the ministers who abstained today, presumably because she wouldn't be able to find anyone to replace them even for the 6 days she's got remaining. What do you think Boris Johnson might do with them?
I think they will have to walk the plank amongst many others. I mean, we're hearing that Philip Hammond is intending to resign sometime before he's sacked. Some people are saying he could resign today, which would give Theresa May the opportunity to appoint the shortest-lived chancellor in British history. I'm not quite sure, though. I think that if he will do it, I like to think Philip Hammond's got more self-respect and to petulantly sort of walk out just to say he wasn't sacked. It's like a sort of a teenager about to be dumped who dumps his girlfriend very quickly before she gets to have the conversation with him. I like to think we're not going to get too much of that. And as for these rebels, of course, Boris has made quite clear that in his cabinet he will only have people who can be relied upon not to go pale and go wobbly when the no deal day comes, if it comes. Now, there's quite a few people who would struggle to pass that test. I still have my doubts of Amber Rudd, despite her protestations, would get along with it. But I think the other thing is that Philip Hammond's quite right to say is that pretty soon he's going to be a backbencher. He'll be joining the Gawkward squad with David Gawk and the others, and there'll be quite a number of them who will be wanting to show maximum strength to Boris. And we've seen the first successful sign of that strength today. I mean, previously, Oliver Letwin and David Gawk, they've talked about doing things before but not quite gone through with it. So today's success, I think, is significant.
James, who's going to be more of a problem for Boris Johnson? Is it going to be the European Research Group or the Gawkward squad?
I think the problem with Boris Johnson is he is going to have to steer between the Scylla and Charybdis. On the one hand, there that relatively small number of ERG who kind of almost actively want no deal or only a GATT24 deal, and these former ministers and other types who are heavily opposed to no deal. I think one thing worth reflecting on from today's vote is very interesting. David Lidington voted with the government, and I think that might be a sign that he is not intending to self-select himself out of contention for a future Boris Johnson government. I mean, that is a noteworthy thing. It fits my theory that all politicians are captive to the job they did before coming into Parliament. And David Lidington was, of course, a Tudor historian. And I think his great hero is Cecil, who obviously stayed at court under Mary Tudor. And I think you see here that he intends to try and stay at the top table. I think in terms of Boris Johnson, I think there is a massive debate raging inside the Boris Johnson transition team at the moment about what the Brexit strategy should be. There are those who want a kind of comprehensively different approach to Theresa May. You know, tweaks won't do. The whole agreement's got to be different. And then there are people who say, look, if we can find a way to make the backstop temporary or provide an exit clause from it, that should be enough. I think today's vote will strengthen that latter faction, because what it is highlighting is quite how difficult and choppy life would be for a Prime Minister who was trying to do no deal. And therefore, if you can find some way to do a deal, then that would be the politically preferable course.
Fraser, how likely is no deal at the moment?
Increasingly likely, I would say. I was really quite struck at the way that Boris Johnson's rhetoric has hardened. I think that there is almost no chance at all of the EU giving a entirely new deal. I think the only area for compromise is to compromise in the backstop, to make it time-limited, or to have an exit clause. I would be very surprised if there is another compromise solution out there. Now, when Boris said he wouldn't do either of those things in the Sun and the Talk radio debate a few days ago, it didn't make me think either he's going to have to feast on humble pie pretty quickly, or he's going to have to go through with no deal. We should remember that there are varieties of no deal. Anthony Brown wrote in the magazine last week that no deal on November the 1st is very different to, for example, no deal 3 years on if there's a 3-year transition to get businesses ready for it. So you could get varieties off that. But right now, I would agree with Ivan Rogers that it's looking more likely than not.
I also think that these people, these MPs today, are making no deal more likely. Because what the EU will look at this result and think, ah, that's all fine. Parliament's going to stop no deal. So when Boris Johnson turns up and says, these are the changes we want, and if I can't get them, we're going to go for no deal, they will think, oh, we don't need to engage with this because Parliament is going to act as our backstop, essentially. Parliament will step in and stop no deal. And I think this is the irony that these people who think that they are rebelling to try and stop no deal are actually one of the factors that are making it more likely, because they are convincing the EU that Parliament is going to stop it when Parliament hasn't yet found a surefire route to stop it.
And we've had a move from Leo Varadkar, the Taoiseach today, Fraser. Just explain what's happened.
Well, Liam Halligan wrote an article in this morning's Spectator about how public opinion in Ireland is shifting. He quoted some prominent Irish journalists thinking that Varadkar has gone a bit too hard, saying that he wouldn't be open to compromise. Then this morning on RTE Radio, the Taoiseach sounded a lot more emollient. He was saying, and I quote, "I am willing to compromise if there is no hard border, if there's the guarantee of rights for Northern Ireland citizens, the preservation of North-South cooperation, and the protection of the Good Friday Agreement. Four conditions that are very easily met. I can't think of a Tory who would argue with any of these four." So all of a sudden, Leo Varadkar is positioning himself as a man that Boris Johnson could do business with. That is a very different Leo Varadkar than the one who was saying a few weeks ago that he would rather no deal than compromise anymore with the Brits. He is now talking the language of compromise, which is great to see, but I wonder if it's too late.
Why is he doing this?
Well, because the Irish government has had to lay out some of its no-deal preparations and scenarios, and these are really focusing minds in Ireland. They're thinking, my God, look at all this. Look at how much of our trade goes through the Dover-Calais route. If that were blocked up, that would affect us too. Why would we subject our island to all of this misery just so we can stick it to the Brits and put on a green jersey, as Pat Leahy said in his very influential Irish Times column? So you do kind of think, well, poor Leo, he's kind of overdone it a bit and we'll have to row back, and that rowing has started.
I think the polls, I mean, the great irony is we've all lamented how the polls have got things wrong over the years. The polls are going to have a hugely important role to play here, because one of the things that will be watched for in Dublin and Brussels is what effect does Boris Johnson have on the polls. The higher Boris Johnson takes the Tories in the polls, the more political capital he'll have. Because what lots of European capitals think, and Dublin, and lots of influential people in Dublin think, is don't really need to worry about no deal, because it would be so bad that it would be over by Christmas. That the Brits would pull back from it, they'd be back at the table, writing the cheque for £39 billion and accepting the backstop very quickly, because no deal would be so catastrophic. If it appears that Boris Johnson can carry the public behind no deal, then I think that things will feel very different. Because it is one thing temporarily accepting no deal to get the full backstop in a month or two's time. And also, in that short period of time, you can kind of slightly finesse the question of how you're actively protecting the integrity of a single market on the border. It's very different if this is going to go on for several years and you actually do need to start doing enough to satisfy the other governments in the EU27 that the integrity of a single market is being protected at that border.
Thank you, James, and thank you, Fraser. And you can subscribe, rate, review, listen, and do all manner of things with this podcast on the iTunes store. It's called Coffee House Shots. Thanks for listening.